Welcome to the world. Welcome to Consumer Choice Radio on this, the fourth day of April in the year 2020. This is the greatest consumer choice program that is available on the nets. We are broadcasting on the Big Talker 106.7 FM out of Wilmington, North Carolina. I'm one of your hosts, Yael Ososki, and I am joined as always by my very astute, always ready, at the helm co-host, Mr. David Clement. Sir David, hello.
Hello, hello. Another week, another show. More quarantine, more coronavirus to talk about.
Lord, no.
Hopefully some other more lighthearted subjects as well.
Yeah, definitely. There's so much out there. I mean, we if you go to consumerchoiceradio.com, go to our website, you can kind of see that we've, you know, been talking about this for a while. Spotted it early in China and have seen the trend. You know, people are surviving. This is how everyone's signing off their emails now, right? It's stay safe. Stay safe,
yeah,
David.
Yeah, stay safe out there. Stay safe. Yeah.
Stay safe.
Yeah, or stay home.
Stay home. That's all the best.
Yes.
Wow. Yes, exactly. So yeah, plenty of things for us to throw into the ether here. I've got plenty of links, and actually David provided some clips for the show today. I'm very excited about what he's brought to the table, so we'll get to introduce to those a bit later.
Yes.
We'll also have an interview with Casey Given, who's the executive director of Young Voices. That'll be on near the bottom of the hour. You'll hear that. Great to hear Casey, someone that we've known a while, a friend of the show. The Rolodex keeps growing.
I definitely say he's a friend of the show.
Friend of the show keeps growing. I mean, I think Steve Forbes is probably our top friend of the show.
Yes. Yes, he certainly is.
Yeah, you got to go back and listen to that interview. That's Steve Forbes. I think it was 2 weeks ago we had that. Had him on the program, his thoughts on COVID-19 and everything going on. You can figure that out. You know, there's a trend, David. I don't know if you've seen it. I don't know. Are you a YouTuber? Do you watch a lot of YouTube?
Not as much since... In the post-Spotify era, or sorry, in the Spotify era, my YouTube consumption has declined steadily.
Really? Okay.
But I used to be a big YouTube guy.
The reason I bring that up is, you know, I follow a lot of YouTube stuff. I was on there and try to produce my own videos every now and then. And apparently there is a worldwide phenomenon now where if you mention the word, the C word, -19, people are getting demonetized.
Oh, interesting.
So you saw this on Facebook where all of a sudden, you know, every Joe Schmo is writing a lot about the virus and saying this and that. And then a lot of people started getting their stuff flagged as spam or basically it was getting deleted. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
I do remember
apparently
that.
It's the same at YouTube and all these tech giants. So, you know, you might remember in the news you heard about they were meeting with various government agencies so that we can figure out how to stop the fake news on the viruses. And this is kind of what has been happening now, is that a lot of people are getting demonetized, a lot of videos are getting deleted. And if you just mention the word, apparently, not just on YouTube, but I've heard the same on Twitch. I've heard video game guys say like, oh man, if I say it, I get demonetized. I lose like a fifth of my viewers. I mean, this is kind of crazy. There might be more articles on that in the future, but... Just so you know, I'm just going to keep saying the C word from now on, or unless you have something else that we can replace it with.
Oof, that's a good question. I'll have to be creative and...
What if we named it Carol Baskins? Now that means absolutely nothing to me, but it means something to you.
That's actually pretty good. I like that.
All right, now, David, if you could, why don't you explain to us a little bit about what this is about? Because I really don't have a clue. I've been seeing a lot of the posts. People are discussing this left and right. I got no clue what's going on. Why is there some weird redneck guy with tigers showing up in my feed? What is going on here? What's that all about?
Yeah, we're talking about Joe Exotic, who is, if you have Netflix or you are on the internet at all and you are not Yael, you have probably watched Tiger King, which is, if I were to describe it to listeners, it's a little bit like you took Swamp People, Dog the Bounty Hunter, and Making a Murderer, and you merge them into one show.
That's like every girl's dream, it sounds like.
I wouldn't... It's like every... person's dream show. I mean, you got mullets, you got guns, you got big cats, you have murder mysteries, you have feuds going on over the internet, the FBI's involved, the Department of Wildlife's involved.
All right, so where's the backstory? Where is this happening? So it's obviously on Netflix. I mean, I saw this up. This is the difference between David and myself, is I have a child at home that I have to care for that does not allow me to slam through whatever it is, 10 episodes in a day or whatever it is. What's the backstory and where is this happening?
So the backstory basically is there are private zoos throughout the U.S. Of people who have big cats. So we're talking tigers, lions, jaguars, all the big exotic cats. And these zoos exist. There are some questions about legality.
So it's redneck zoos, essentially, like guys who – I think I've seen these in North Carolina and Georgia.
I mean, that's one way to describe it. So the main character that they're filming is Joe Exotic, who is this gay, gun-toting, tiger-keeping zoo person. And then the flip side of that is there's this tiger sanctuary in Florida run by Carol Baskin, and it's this ongoing feud between basically the private zoo-ish community and this sanctuary woman about whether or not it should be legal to own these cats, whether it should be legal to breed them, and all of those things. And there's this basically growing feud between the two, and then it slowly goes from beyond the feud into who killed Carol Baskin's ex-husband, how did she get all of her money, to the feds raiding Joe Exotic, and it just becomes an absolute bonanza of entertainment. So I can't recommend it enough. In terms of what's good to watch on Netflix right now.
So apparently his full name, according to the Wikipedia, because apparently he's been married multiple times, is Joseph Allen Maldonado Passage, and his birth name or whatever is Schriebvogel. So it's like screaming bird.
Yeah, he's changed his name quite a few times. They get into that in the show as to why he's doing that and the legal battles that he's been in. It's quite a journey.
Well, I guess I missed my mark too, because he ran for president of the U.S. in 2016. So I guess I could have voted for him then. All right. Well, I don't know if this is a consumer. Is there a consumer angle in this? Is it about the right to own these exotic animals? Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know if there's a consumer angle in that way, other than the fact that Netflix is providing us with just pure gold to watch while we're stuck at home.
That's good. Okay, the pure gold metric. Netflix. Yeah, the pure gold metric. Okay, that's good. All right, well, let's start it off on a good note then. So, David, you've been watching that. I've been crushing this. Did you already finish the series then?
I did finish it.
So it's seven episodes, I guess, now. I see.
Yes. Yes. And God. It is fantastic.
It is. It's just crazy being a Netflix executive, the creative guy, you know, or the team. Could be a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Because figuring out the timing of this stuff, with what gets funding, you know, how things are going together. Because if all of you are clicking on in the last couple of weeks, you probably saw that there is this pandemic program.
Yes.
So I started watching this. I didn't finish it, but I think when this first started in January, everyone was talking about what was happening even before it was ruled a pandemic, the Carol Baskins. I remember seeing that on Netflix. I was like, well, that's kind of crazy. That's good timing. Good PR department they got there at Netflix.
Yep. And then all of a sudden the movie Contagion got popular again with Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. I did rewatch this as well. Fairly interesting. It's if there's an I'll do another illusion on Netflix, there's this Goop series by Gwyneth Paltrow that's on Netflix.
Yeah, don't watch that. That should be
your wife has not made you watch this?
No.
Okay,
we do not we are not in line with pseudoscience in his household.
Yeah, there's a lot of that on that program. Yeah. Apparently, there's a scene in the trailer where she's like, you know, I kind of got tired of Hollywood. You know, I just don't want to make out with Matt Damon for like a sixth time. And I just laughed because then they're husband and wife in Contagion. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I rewatched Contagion as well, which is interesting. It's cool. I wonder who the Jude Law character, who is, you know, kind of the gonzo journalist of our era today, is, who's kind of hawking an alternative thing. I don't know.
Maybe could, Alex Jones?
But... Not even, because he could even say Trump with the, what is it, hydroxychloroquine stuff that everyone's been talking about and trying to criticize him on. And I did see some allusions that people were making on Reddit to that essentially Trump is the Jude Law character. But it seems like this whole treatment thing is panning out. I don't know. I'm not going to follow that until they get the real vaccine, and then we can talk.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I mean, it's watching Contagion is a real eye opener for what's going on right now, because for the most part, the only major differences is the fatality rate for the virus.
I think there it's 25% in the movie.
Something along those lines.
So one scene that I thought was going to be perfect to today's scenario was the scene where Marion Cotillard, one of my favorite actresses, the French actress, she's playing the part of like a World Health Organization researcher. And she's in Hong Kong, I think, looking for the source of the virus and where it came from and where it stemmed from. And essentially she's researching it, and you have the Hong Kong cops that are right behind her. And they're just like, oh, no, you can't say that it started here. That's bad. That's unfair. And then they kidnap her. And I was like, oh, this is exactly like today. You have like, you know, some, maybe they're linked to China, and the Chinese guys are trying to make sure that, you know, they're going to say it was based in Europe or based in the U.S. But it turns out they just wanted to use her as leverage to get a vaccine first. I thought they would have gone another way.
Yeah. They kidnapped her to trade her for vaccines. We won't spoil how that turned out, but
So you can watch that movie. I think that's back from a couple of years ago, so you can have some fun and see. Apparently, from what I've been reading on the IMDb, it is one of the more accurate portrayals of the CDC specifically. I don't think the World Health Organization. It doesn't seem like they're working as hard as Marion Cotillard was, but I could be wrong. They're trying to make sure that vape device is not in your hand anymore. So.
Yeah. They're busy busy trying to police ex-smokers.
Yeah. So you're listening to Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Tahoe 106.7 FM. We went through some more stuff. We're going to have more of these kind of articles and conversations on the website, consumerchoiceradio.com. You can find a lot of the articles and blogs we've been writing. And some of our colleagues, I think we've actually been doing some fun and cheeky stuff, trying to keep people a bit entertained and also promote consumer choice all at the same time. There's a couple here that our colleagues have been writing. Let me pop on over here to the website. There's one that I wrote that is on the good, the bad, and the ugly laws that are passed in the wake of the Carol Baskins. So I went through the tiers of providing health care. We've got great examples of states that are removing regulations that prohibit medical professionals from practicing in other states. Definitely good. New York State opened up its recommendation process for prescription drugs. Good. Telemedicine. Good. The bad, CDC and the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. monopolize and centralize all testing. Bad. Ugly. Chinese Communist Party and its affiliated companies, they sold tests that were later determined to be super faulty in Spain and the Czech Republic. Apparently, all these things are bogus. The Chinese Communists are trying to be the heroes of the day, and all they're sending us is crap.
Yep.
So that's one.
And some of the story there and how that's developed on faulty tests, I think it was 1.2 million antibody tests were sent to Slovakia from China, and they all basically ended up being garbage.
Didn't work. And in the Czech Republic, it was like 80%. Just everyone they tested was positive, even if they had like no connection, or they just gave like total bad reading. So that's very bad. I also put in there alcohol delivery, the good, and bad, and the ugly. We mentioned that a lot last week on the program and weeks before. Apparently, South Africa has banned all alcohol sales.
Yeah, that's a terrible idea.
No, and I don't know if you saw this, but there was a very good one on April Fool's Day. It was a picture of Jason Kenney, the Prime Minister of the Albertan province, and it says, Jason Kenney outlaws all alcohol in Alberta. And then you click the YouTube, and it's a Rickroll. That was very good.
Yeah. And people were getting pretty anxious about that. I mean, it's funny, actually. I know we talked about this before with Quebec, but I think it's nice to see that it's an essential, that it's available. One, because there's a harm reduction argument to it, because there are people who are unfortunately obviously addicted and they would go through withdrawal and then end up in the hospital. But then there's a strong push of people who are just saying, well, I mean, things are looking pretty dire right now. So let's not stop people from being able to have the drink of their choice.
Yeah, which is finally
definitely appreciated.
It's sad that it has to come in a time of crisis of the Carol Baskins that we need to have this kind of, you know, repeal of laws or finally allowing people to, you know, purchase products like they would from any other store. Might have alcohol on it, but so it goes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's a little bit more about that. I won't play the Joe Exotic thing again. So let's get into some of these clips. David, you actually brought some clips to the show. I don't know if you guys know how the production usually works here, but usually I'm putting together the clips and cutting them and making sure they're ready. But David actually did some research this time. He did his homework.
I did.
He studied up and he brought us some clips. So David, what do we got? What are you going to throw at us here?
Well, I think the first thing we need to talk about is the question of wearing a mask. To mask or not to mask? That is the question. Because obviously there is this ongoing debate. There's clearly a shortage of masks. Public health officials at numerous points have said, don't wear masks unless you're sick. Save them for the medical health professionals. They're not really that effective for ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the data is suggesting otherwise. So it's you're starting to see the data come out on transmission, and it's very strongly correlating with mask use in terms of being able to flatten the curve. And so that has a lot of people basically saying, well, hold on a second. Why were we lied to? Why? Like, this doesn't make any sense. How many lives could be saved if we had, one, prepared properly, but two, not told people or explicitly told people not to wear masks, which is what many public health officials have done, whether it's the top-ranking health person in Canada, I believe it was the Surgeon General in the U.S., and now, actually, as you know, there are countries in Europe who are implementing rules where you have to have a mask when you leave the house. So we're almost starting to see a complete 180 in terms of what we do about masks and whether or not they're effective, which tees up perfectly to, and I hate saying this because I am not a Tucker Carlson fan. I think if someone who is the political opposite of Tucker Carlson, it's probably me. But he has a rant or a clip on masks and what the government said, and it's quite impactful and I think pretty accurate in terms of the issue with what's happened so far.
So in any crisis, trust is critical, and not just for moral reasons, for practical reasons. The government can't coordinate a national response if the public doesn't believe what it says. It doesn't believe the government's looking out for its best interest. That's why honesty is essential at times like this. When the government lies, people know, they can tell, and then they stop listening. From the beginning of the Chinese coronavirus epidemic, mask shortages have been a major problem. Some people hoarded hundreds or thousands of them. Manufacturers couldn't keep up. In some cases, apparently, they were sent overseas. The foreign countries we outsourced our factories to prudently decided to keep the masks for themselves. Nationalism is real in a crisis. And of course, here in the United States, our own government didn't have nearly enough masks stockpiled to cope with what has happened. Now, from the start, honesty would have been the right policy in the face of this. We could have just said to the public, we messed up, but healthcare professionals, the sick and the elderly need the masks most so they get priority. And people would have understood that because it makes sense. But the government didn't do that. Instead, they told us lies, dumb lies, that anyone who thought about it for a second could see right through. They told the public, you shouldn't buy masks because masks don't work. On February 29th, the Surgeon General tweeted this, quote, seriously, people, stop buying masks. They are not effective in preventing the general public from catching coronavirus. But if healthcare providers can't get them to care for sick patients, it puts them and our communities at risk. The CDC amplified this untruth. Even now, the CDC's official coronavirus guidelines only recommend wearing masks for those who are sick or their caregivers. The press joined in, too. A CNN piece from March 2nd says this, quote, Americans don't need masks. The CDC says that healthy people in the U.S. should not wear them because they won't protect them from the novel coronavirus. In fact, face masks might actually increase your risk for infection if they aren't worn properly. But medical workers who treat patients with novel coronavirus do need them, unquote. Time magazine joined in to whine, quote, health experts are telling healthy people not to wear face masks for coronavirus. So why are so many doing it? Why do you think, Time magazine, you moron? The article suggests that believing in masks is some kind of superstition, like not walking under ladders or being afraid of black cats. It's insulting. It's ridiculous. They're telling you masks don't work unless you work in a hospital? How does that work? Does mask effectiveness change based on what job you do? They're only useful if you're already sick? What? Coronavirus can spread from asymptomatic carriers. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Oh, wait, you're just too dumb to wear the mask. Okay, because they're really hard to put on. Of course masks work. Everyone knows that. Dozens of research papers have proved it. In South Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, the rest of Asia, where coronavirus has been kept under control, masks were key. So look, we understand there's a shortage of masks. We understand only certain people should get them because it's a triage moment. We get it. But stop lying to us. Because it makes us cynical. It divides the country. Tell the truth. We can handle it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I do have to admit, though, that the Tucker Carlson clips that I've seen in the last couple of weeks have been pretty good. He's been on this. He's been on the World Health Organization. Our colleague Jeff Steyer was on the program there in the January mm-hmm. to talk about the World Health Organization and how they bumbled and screwed mm-hmm. up. Wow. This is good. I think we're definitely seeing that turnaround. And, you know, the logical answer is that, well, they just didn't want everyone to go out and panic and buy the masks.
So then we just lie?
I don't know.
Exactly. So they didn't want people to go out and buy the masks and not have enough for healthcare professionals, which is totally fine. But don't tell people that they don't work. Because, I mean, that's just not true. And then people, what do? They go out and make a point of buying the masks as the evidence comes out that they do work.
Yeah.
So you give people the wrong reasons to do the right thing, which is just from a public policy standpoint, is not good.
Yeah, it's treating people as idiots, as Tucker said, and he's totally right there.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Trudeau in Canada is facing some backlash on this. Because it's twofold. One, you have the chief medical officer saying you don't need a mask. And then two, Canada sent hundreds and hundreds of thousands of masks to China. I think it was in late January or early February. And obviously we have a shortage in Canada as well.
Yeah.
And so there's all this turmoil coming to light about masks and whether or not they are useful. And this conversation is going to get even more important as this quarantine rolls on, because the longer it rolls on, the more likely people are going to want to try and get back some normalcy in their lives, whether that's shopping or anything else that's legally allowed.
Definitely.
And as people do that, you're going to want to make sure that they're as low risk as possible in terms of getting the virus as well as transmitting it. And so as this quarantine goes on and people naturally push the limits of what they're allowed to legally do outside of their own homes, the more masks there are as that process unfolds, the better, because it allows for us to still ensure that we're not getting the virus or spreading it. So all sorts of craziness. Yeah. On the mask front.
So for obviously where I'm sitting in the country of Austria, we just, I think it was starting on Wednesday, they first required us to wear masks when you go out to the grocery stores. And it's the grocery stores that are handing out masks. And I actually went to go test this, David. Uh-huh. I'm a researcher for the show, for the program, for Consumer Choice Radio. So I went to the store, and I have my own sort of robber baron mask that I've been wearing anyway when I go outside, because why not? It's fun, and now you're allowed to do it. And apparently I'm saving lives. And when I went to the store, I actually saw a lot of people wearing them, but apparently they had just run out. So, okay. Yeah, later afternoon, I can kind of understand, maybe. And it was only the second day. I don't know where they're getting them from. I don't know if the government is making them or just purchased a lot or they have their own stockpile. I'm not 100% sure. But I did see basically everyone wearing them in the store. So I've ordered my own. I ordered my own, I think, early last week from a local hardware store online. So I should receive them very soon because I'm hoarding masks. No, I don't know. I ordered like five, so we'll see.
Yeah, perfect. There you go. I mean, the flip side of this argument is, or the progression of this argument is now also, mask production is going to reach levels that we didn't think were possible, and that's because businesses are now retooling to, one, build ventilators, but then also build this personal protective gear. So we have masks, the face shields. Like, I know one of the largest manufacturers of hockey equipment, Bauer, has shifted their production lines to make the long face shields instead of the hockey visors that they would be making. So there are all these companies who are kind of retooling to meet the need, for, first and foremost, to supply hospitals. But two, eventually those are going to leak into the consumer market where ordinary people can get their hands on masks as well to protect themselves for when they're out in public. So,
and this is your next clip, right? You have this ready to go.
Yes, yes. The next clip is a Trump press conference with the founder of MyPillow. If you've ever seen the infomercial for MyPillow, you'll recognize this guy's voice.
A friend of mine, Mike Lindell of MyPillow. Boy, do you sell those pillows? That's unbelievable what you do. David Taylor of Procter & Gamble and Greg Hayes of United Technologies Corporation. And I just want to tell all of you that America is very grateful to you and what you've done. Amazing job you've done, and we thank you very much. I'd like you to come up and say a couple of words, if you might, about your companies. Mike, come on up. Come on up, fellas, please. Come on up. You have to say what you're doing because it's been really incredible. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, well, MyPillow is a U.S. vertically integrated company which has been forced to adjust to the changing business environment as a result of the pandemic. MyPillow is uniquely positioned as a U.S. company that functions as a manufacturer, logistics management distributor, and direct-to-consumer. Given our current business lines, we are experiencing the effects of this pandemic firsthand. But MyPillow has done, we've established an internal task force which is monitoring future needs of companies across the country as a result of this pandemic. And given our position, we've begun to research and develop new protocols to address the current and future needs of U.S. businesses across multiple sectors. How companies are going to prepare themselves when they once again open up and changes to their current operations in order to adjust to future threats and pandemics. MyPillow has designated some of its call center to help U.S. companies navigate the many issues that resulted from this pandemic. We've dedicated 75% of my manufacturing to produce cotton face masks. In 3 days, I was up to 10,000 a day. By Friday, I want to be up to 50,000 a day.
Okay. Well, we get the point there. So MyPillow guy is doing the MyPillow pivot and providing masks. And there's a lot of examples of different companies doing this that are, you know, particularly with the hand sanitizer. You've seen a lot of distilleries putting that together. You've even seen the Amish community in Pennsylvania. They've been, normally they're making dresses and things like this, and they've actually been making their own face masks as well to give to different medical centers. So good entrepreneurial spirit. This is good, even from MyPillow guy, who is, I think, a fixture on Fox News.
Yep, yep. So two funny things on that. So the first is with the Amish. There is a good Amish joke, a coronavirus or Carol Baskin virus Amish joke. Basically, someone tweeted, "We're all at home and staying inside. Is someone going to go knock on the Amish people's door and let them know this is going on?"
Well, yeah, I think they're allowed to get newspapers, so they probably got that.
Of course.
I like that, though. I like that.
The second thing is the MyPillow guy at the end of that clip goes on a bit of a religious rant and gets raked over the coals by the media for talking about God and his faith. And for someone who's not religious like myself, I just thought it was so distasteful for the media to rake this guy over the coals after he just announced that he was basically retooling 1,500 employees to try and save people's lives.
Yeah.
And it's like, you might not like what he had to say in terms of his religious views, but geez, guys, like, check yourselves. Who cares? This guy's trying to save lives here.
Wow.
So let's focus on that. And
yeah,
there's
a good Washington Examiner article here. The headline is "Media Pundits Mock MyPillow CEO After Announcements on Company's Efforts to Combat Coronavirus." Yeah, they talk about the quote is, "God gave us grace on November 8, 2016 to change the course we were on. God had been taken out of our schools and lives. A nation had turned its back on God. I encourage you to use this time at home to get back into the Word. Read our Bible." Doesn't seem offensive to me.
No, I mean, that's not the way in which I view the world, but that totally his prerogative, and I will give him a free pass to say whatever he wants about needing to read the Bible if he's going to be trying to make masks to save lives. I mean, it's almost like it's like people letting their political persuasion shift their viewpoints on what good or bad public policy is. This shouldn't be a partisan issue. I mean, the guy's doing something that is great for everyone. So let's recognize that and figure out what we can do to help him ramp up production.
It's a strange world out there.
Definitely.
Yeah, very strange.
So we've got an interview lined up here, David. We're going to go to the interview now with Casey Given, Executive Director of Young Voices. He, you know, has great pulse and connections to young journalists and pundits who are very good assets at this point in time to do very good analysis. And we've actually mentioned some of the articles that have been by Young Voices writers. So we'll go ahead and play that. Jamie, go ahead and roll the clip. Welcome back to Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker, 106.7 FM. We have a perfect guest on the line, someone who can give us some very good insight as to what is happening now, and also some great key talented figures that are not just in journalism, but all across the policy perspective. We're talking with Casey Given. He is the executive director of Young Voices. Young Voices is the impressive young outlet that is providing all sorts of pundits and writers for the mainstream media all around the world. So Casey, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Absolutely. Great to be here with you.
And, you know, I'm very familiar with Young Voices, having been an advocate in the very beginning and seeing it grow. You know, if you were to sort of give your elevator pitch to someone you just met, what would you say about what Young Voices is and what you guys kind of do in the community?
Yeah. So Young Voices is a nonprofit talent agency and PR firm for liberty. So we offer free services in which we help young libertarians, young conservatives get into the media. What that means is editing and pitching their articles for publication. That means arranging TV and radio hits, kind of like this one right here, and just generally being a media mentor for folks who really want to spread the message of individual liberty, free markets, and, you know, to cultivate the next generation of great thought leaders for liberty. So we have a network of 50 writers across the country, and we basically serve as their mentors and their advocates and their PR firm to help spread the message.
I love the use of talent agency, by the way.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. So, I mean, Casey, one thing for Yael and I is we both will probably, I mean, we hear that description, and for guys like Yael and I, it makes a lot of sense. But for our listeners, could you walk us through why you created this? Like, what sparked your interest in kind of formalizing that talent and PR portion? Why was it needed? What made you get it off the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, technically, I did not create Young Voices, as you guys know. So Young Voices was originally started as a project of Students for Liberty, a great libertarian student organization that all three of us have been involved in. And that was started in 2013, and I spun it off in 2016 to its own 501c3 nonprofit once it kind of became evident that the mission and the types of folks who were attracted to our program was broader than just students. In terms of why I really saw, had a vision and thought that it was worth investing my time full time into and really trying to cultivate it from a project of an umbrella organization to its own standalone organization. You know, I really think that we're living in unique times in that, whereas in the past for most of American history, really, there were gatekeepers for the media and you had to be trusted as an expert, an older expert or whatnot, with decades and decades of experience to even get access to the media. Now the world is really flattened, where there's just so many channels and so much opportunity for younger people to get involved with educated opinions, with budding expertise. And really the democratization of media, I think, is very fascinating, but also it's something that presents a challenge that a lot of young writers can get caught up in sensationalism and whatnot. So I really thought that Young Voices was needed not just to provide channels for young writers and to cultivate great journalists and whatnot, but also to be a mentor and a guide to make sure that younger folks enter the media and pursue careers in an ethical and healthy way that, to truly cultivate great ideas for liberty.
And what have been some of the better outlets that you've kind of been able to place some of your writers or thinkers at? Because I know they span a lot for mainstream, but also some pretty big television stations as well.
Yeah, so we really run the gamut in a lot of different places. We have quite a bit of success in state and local outlets. We try not to focus just on kind of national Washington, New York kind of press corps. So in the states, we have a lot of success in places like the Orange County Register, Kansas City Star. We have a monthly column in the Detroit News, places like that. Nationally, though, we do really try to focus as well on getting some big flashy media hits every once in a blue moon. We're pretty successful. Regularly, we're in USA Today. Semi-regularly, we're in Wall Street Journal, especially their Future View column for students. They quite like our students who get into there. So those are probably the biggest places, as well as on TV, radio. Fox channels, Fox News, Fox Business is probably our closest partner for in terms of notability outlets. Once in a blue moon, we've been on CNN and MSNBC before, but you can imagine that they don't return our calls as much.
So, speaking about that, what is the when you're talking to editors or show producers, what is the response when you're pitching young thinkers? Is there a hesitancy to bring these people on shows or feature their material because of their age? Or do you see media just generally being more receptive to young people getting into the mix and having that perspective heard as well?
Yeah, it really depends on the outlet and the editor or booker. Definitely, we do get pushback from certain outlets. I mean, our name, Young Voices, is really, I like to tell our staff that it's our greatest asset, but it's also kind of our greatest liability. That some outlets, when they see Young Voices, they're like, oh, cool, you know, and all we publish or all we get on TV are kind of older white guys. Like, we want younger, diverse, like, experts. But people also question and say, well, what's your true expertise here? You know, you're just getting into the game. So it really depends. I will say generally we've had quite a bit of success in and getting some placements. I think that you know, we're very selective in who we accept into our program, and we have set high standards. So sometimes even people who are initially skeptical of us, I'd like to think we win them over with kind of the merit of our commentary.
That's great. And there's plenty of articles that people will be able to find. You just go to young/voices.com. You can kind of see the latest things that a lot of the writers and talent have been writing. One thing I wanted to ask you, Casey, because you are a Californian native. What's going on over there, man? I think there's so much that we could cover there. But tell us, you know, we've covered a lot of stuff of California, you know, specifically on this program. We can have its own dedicated thing. We always joke that at Consumer Choice Center, we can have our own bureau dedicated to only following California. But, you know, tell us, man, you're originally from there. You kind of know the politics a bit better. You know, how have things evolved really since your days in college?
Yeah, well, maybe I don't know it quite as well. I gotta be honest, I oftentimes kind of tune out these types of state policy battles. In terms of California, yeah, I was born and raised Salinas, California, Monterey area, went to Berkeley for school. Of course, California has quite a bit of challenges. You know, I just think of my family, my personal family. My mom is a public school teacher. She's actually, believe it or not, the union rep for her school. And my dad is a small business owner, Republican. I have no clue how they fell in love, but I get a mouthful from both of them whenever I get home about challenges, you know, from the union. I mean, there's just always pension crises and whatnot. And also, of course, you know, that's coming from my Democrat mom, but from my Republican dad, it's just everything with new taxes and just ways that that the government has not been friendly to business owners, and especially to make matters worse, he's in agriculture and you know, there's been a drought for several years now, although it's been getting slightly better, and just a lot of nonsensical government policies have attributed to that, you know, giving exemptions for things like almonds, as like John Oliver has gone over and some of his segments, and also just kind of access to waterways and whatnot that are nonsensical. So there's just so much going on in California. I've kind of tuned it out as a DCer, but I definitely get a mouthful when I get home.
That's awesome. It's always good to hear when the family dynamics, especially in the Trump era, when we have differing opinions, is always great, whether it's our parents or family Thanksgiving. There's always lots of good stories about people who have interesting views when they're overlaid against each other. In just to kind of bring one question I had for you in terms of Young Voices, because I know I saw this headline this week, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys just had your – March was your most – successful month in terms of media placements or something along those lines. I did see one of those releases come out. Do you mind just elaborating how March was for you guys?
Yes, it was. Actually, I'm glad you caught that, because I literally just sent that email, posted it about 10, 15 minutes before I hopped on the call with you. So cheers to you. Yeah. That's kind of the big news for Young Voices from my organization today. So we just had our best month in January, or March, excuse me, in our history for placing media. We had in March 2020, 71 media hits, 49 articles, and 22 TV radio hits. for a grand total of 71. Wow. Yeah, and that's going back to our history through 2013 has been the best. And really, it's something that I've been kind of caught off guard because, you know, anything with the coronavirus going around, I would have thought that this would have been one of our worst media hits. But I think we're really getting into a groove here where looking at our list of hits, there's a lot of demand for people, for media outlets to have sharp analysis of the coronavirus, not necessarily the public health aspect. Of course, we're by no means medical experts, so we're staying out of that. But just the government response. I mean, there's so much happening at just a bottleneck pace. It's kind of giving us whiplash that, you know, we just passed a $2 trillion stimulus. Nobody really knows what's in it. I mean, we know we're getting checks and whatnot, but there's just so much money going to so many industries. And that's just one example of the type of stories that our folks are really digging into and providing critical analysis that, frankly, even the media, and it's not necessarily their fault because there's just so much happening, I haven't had the chance to really dig into. So, and coming, you know, I hope April is just as up. We really have a lot of opportunity to dig our teeth into kind of this exceptional times we live in and provide really sharp analysis.
So Casey, for our audience, what's the best way to follow Young Voices? I mentioned the website earlier, but give us the hit on other podcasts or Facebook pages or anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you mentioned, young-voices.com is our website. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, if you just look for Young Voices. We also have a podcast ourselves called Underscored. If it's available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, just generally anywhere podcasts are found. If you just look for, search for Underscored Young Voices, we do about one or two episodes a month where we invite external guests from different think tanks, journalists, et cetera, to have a conversation with our contributors, our writers. So it's a really neat one. So yeah, just generally look for Young Voices or Young Voices DC, because there's a lot of Young Voices, but we're usually the top in the SEO game.
Well, we're speaking to the best one. So we've been speaking with Casey Given. He is the executive director of Young Voices. Thanks so much, Casey, for coming on the program.
Thanks, guys.
And we're back on Consumer Choice Radio. Just listen to that great interview with Casey. David, we've got I've got one clip I wanted to throw your way. This is going to be a bit dark, though. I don't know if you're ready to go dark.
All right. Yeah, let's hear it.
All right. This is going to be a bit dark. This is in the U.S. This is happening between New York and Rhode Island.
Yeah, Liz, that woman I spoke to has a home in New York and also in Jamestown. At first, she felt singled out and out of place. But she says she got over that pretty quickly because it's for the community's best interest.
So 14 days from then,
the Rhode Island National Guard and Jamestown Police knocking on the door of Laura Procopo. Procopo has a home in Rhode Island, but spends most of her time in Somers, New York. She arrived in Rhode Island last Friday.
No grocery store, no convenience store.
It was surreal. I wasn't alarmed at all, really, because I knew it was coming, so that was good. Had I not known about it, I would have been a little alarmed and sort of scared.
Police and the National Guard have been knocking on the doors of out-of-staters to ensure they're following Governor Gina Raimondo's mandatory 14-day quarantine order.
Sort of on a main road, and my car is here, and I know I haven't gotten any, you know, dirty looks for being from New York, but it's a feeling. This was the first time that I ever came to Jamestown in all these years where I felt a little uncomfortable, like I maybe don't belong here.
Over the weekend, Raimondo signed a new order extending the quarantine to anyone coming to Rhode Island from out of state, not just New York.
I think it's more fair. It doesn't make people feel so singled out.
Procopo says she's happy to quarantine and hopes others are doing the same.
I absolutely 100% stand by the governor's decision. The Jamestown police were phenomenal. The woman was delightful from the National Guard. Very, very knowledgeable about what was going on, and they were very nice.
And during these door knocks, the National Guard collects your information, then passes it along to the health department. Procopo says they told her someone is going to check in on her again. So far, she hasn't received another visit or a call.
So this is pretty unique. I don't know where else this is happening, that they're actually using the National Guard and local police to enforce these quarantine orders for people coming out of state. And the only reason we know about this is that she published the video on her Ring device. Yeah. Her Amazon Ring device. So that's where we see an image of the National Guard woman and the police officer both wearing masks and gloves, staying back 6 feet and making sure that she is at home and telling her she's not even allowed to go to the grocery store. None of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. What's your take on the escalation of how...
Yeah, and you don't think, of all the places in the United States, Rhode Island is usually not number one for fascism 101. So I don't know. It's interesting to see the National Guard, because, there is a National Guard of every state. And, the last, 20 years, they've all been fighting over in Afghanistan and Iraq. They've been, using the state National Guards over there. And now we're using them. I guess what they should be used for protecting the country when it comes to natural disasters or pandemics or anything like that. At least that's what happened in the movie Contagion. I don't know. It's a very uneasy feeling to have police and cops doing door checks regardless. They're not asking to search her home, but they're still, checking on her, and there's some requirement or a burden on her that she is... I don't know. It's very uneasy. I don't know if we need to go that far. I would be much more in favor of just voluntary. And I have heard that, had we traveled to the U.S. from Europe in that time, there would have been a 14-day quarantine or stay-at-home quarantine that we would have had to follow. But as far as I know, there was no enforcement of that with police and National Guard, at least in North Carolina.
Well, yeah. And now various governments have created basically tip lines where you can call in your neighbors, where if they've come home, let's say from traveling, and now I guess it would apply for interstate travel, depending on the state, you can actually phone them in and tell on them, which makes me uncomfortable. It's one of those things where you can understand why, but it doesn't mean that you really like the direction that we're going. And that isn't to say that it may not be necessary. I don't know if we're there yet. But it does, the thought of a snitch line for your neighbors and officers showing up at your door to ensure that you're home makes me a little uncomfortable. I mean, there was an ongoing debate in England, because a local police department was basically using drones to hover over people jogging in a public, an empty public park.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know if you heard, but they had video of the loudspeaker, what they were saying for the joggers.
Oh, really?
Because you'd be in jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of this now. There's a couple of links that we'll put in the show notes at consumerchoiceradio.com if you want to listen to that. You're listening to our program on the Big Talker 106.7 FM, broadcasting out of Wilmington, North Carolina. If you have not yet, please do click on over to the website and subscribe to the podcast that does go out after the live program. We've got plenty of people who are listening and subscribing in all areas, but you can find us on Spotify, RSS, YouTube, wherever your podcast app is. Plenty there. And there's so many other articles that, I'd love to talk about. There's just not enough time. In terms of what governments are doing right now, how they were tracking with cell phones. I mean, because the Carol Baskins is out there, a lot of governments are using cell phone data, whether anonymized or not, to see where large groups of people are gathering, where perhaps they shouldn't. There's a pretty good post that was put together at ExpressVPN, so one VPN company, just talking about how the location tracking is being categorized in places like Israel and Iran and South Korea. So there's really interesting stuff that, does give you kind of the civil liberties chills. There'll be a project that we're working on that we'll publish very soon that will deal with that. That's why people are using the hashtag COVID-1984, the Carol Baskins 1984. Sorry. But yeah. Any other stories, David, that are that have made your way across the desk? Just stuff that we probably should tell our listeners or at least highlight. I mean, there's a lot more positive news, no doubt. But
yeah, I mean, one other big negative story, which has to be talked about a little bit, is just the joblessness numbers. The amount of Americans who are applying for unemployment benefits is over 10 million. We're looking at numbers way worse than the Great Depression, or approaching what could be worse than the Great Depression over the long term. That's a conversation that you and I are going to have over the next month or two, is what are the externalities of us basically putting the American economy on pause? And what impact does that have to the lives of ordinary Americans, whether it's your retirement savings or your employability? What does this look like after? How much economic damage will we do in the fight against coronavirus? And then at some point, we'll have to look at this from a cost-benefit analysis. And unfortunately, that will almost certainly only happen after things have calmed down. But a conversation will have to be had in terms of whether or not we took things too far, and whether or not the cure was worse than the disease. Not saying that we're there yet, but that's definitely a conversation that we will have to discuss at some point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here, let's end on some good news. There's, we mentioned before, a lot of the manufacturers that are pivoting. There's one article here from Bloomberg about liquor brands. Apparently, they're hosting a lot of virtual happy hours for bartenders, where they're actually giving money to different bars that are not able to serve customers right now, and allowing them to hold virtual happy hours with some of their customers and regulars, and reach out to all others.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so there's something that's being done there in the alcohol industry. A lot of bars are not able to provide, you know, the drinks by the curb or some of the things that we've discussed. So, you know, there are some people stepping up to do that, and there's many more. I mean, there's always positive things that are happening. The entrepreneurial spirit of many people is very strong, and there's still a lot of human flourishing. There's an article, at least as well, from where is this? From Wall Street Journal, about who's hiring right now. The firms that are hiring massively during this time for the Carol Baskins. We've got, you know, all the shipping stuff. Obviously, even Ford is hiring a lot of people because they're making ventilators now. So many companies that are actually looking for more people. So, hey, man, positive news. There's good positive stuff out there. It's not all sad. It's not all bad because of Carol Baskins. There's a lot of things we can blame her for. But, you know, perseverance is not one of them. I think we're doing pretty good.
No, of course not. Yes, we will persevere.
We will persevere. And if not, we can try to go on the internet and order it via Prime Now. So thanks everybody for listening. You've been listening to Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker 106.7 FM out of Wilmington, North Carolina. Go to our website, subscribe to the feed, everything else. I am one half of your host, Yael Lasowski, broadcasting from Vienna, Austria. I wish you all the best.
And this is David Clement signing off. Until next week.
Until next week.